Hey everybody, it's Sunny. Just letting you know that you're listening on the iTunes feed. Go sign up at subbeacon.com. You got an episode on Minions Rise of Gru this week. Next week there's not going to be an episode in this feed, just FYI, because we didn't do bonus episode, not fair to the paying subscribers, etc., etc. So go sign up at subbeacon.com if you want to get an episode about Thor Love and Thunder, because that's where that's going to live forever. This was a fun episode. This week we're talking about the new Hulu documentary that's about Victoria's Secret and Jeffrey Epstein, and you can imagine all the fun we're going to have with that. So anyway, go check it out, subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Sign up. It's as little as a dollar a month. See you there.
This puny little child thinks he can be a villain.
I am pretty despicable.
Please stop calling me that.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victorino Mattis. Wait, that's not right. I'm Sonny Bunch, along with JVL, Jonathan V. Last, and special guest... host of the show is Paul Crookston. He's here, too. Just a reminder, Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe. Tell your friends. Don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, how are you doing?
Sonny, we got to go right to Paul.
Yeah. What?
Because I have stuff for us to talk about. But Paul Crookston, congratulations. Mazel tov. Has gotten himself engaged.
Thank you very much.
Yay!
Yes, it's
Paul.
True.
You can still get away.
But yeah, they
stop.
She has a few more months left to escape. But no, the aforementioned South Korean girlfriend is now the South Korean fiance. Lauren and I got engaged at the National Gallery of Art, and yeah, it was beautiful. We just got the pictures actually from the photographer.
I am a sucker for engagement stories in the same way that I'm a sucker for weddings. Please tell me the story of how you proposed.
All right. So the main thing in this whole episode was getting the green light from the parents. So that was the final thing that this all hinged on. So everything was taken care of, photographer, the ring, all of it was all a done deal.
And photographer? You bring a photographer to the engagement? Is that what the kids do now?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's that's not a must, but I have a friend who's a photographer.
Okay. Now, did you also TikTok it or just photos?
No, there actually has not been any social media. Mom wants me to post, so I'm probably going to do that in the next couple days. I just got the full photograph list, so now we're social media ready.
Okay, so you got the ring,
mm-hmm.
You got the photographer, you had your battle plan,
yep.
And then you went to Lauren's folks and said...
Yeah, so I went three times over the course of several months, and third time's the charm.
Boy.
So...
Wait, what did they say no the first two times?
Yes, basically.
What?
And so this...
This wow, how do you... The balls the size of church bells on you to go back to the well not once but twice on that?
Well, it was...
That's awesome.
It was very clear that they were saying not yet rather than no. So...
What are they saying? They say, we're sorry, which is until you can shave, Paul. You can't go around asking our daughter
today,
to marry.
Actually, yeah, I was looking a little scruffy,
what
actually.
What changed over the course of those weeks and months?
Basically, I convinced them that my career was not a total disaster. And that, in fact, I am headed in the right direction. That Latin is making a comeback. And that I'm at the forefront of that teacherly endeavor.
Excellent. And well, that's good.
So that, along with some other things, I was able to explain to them that I know it sounds not great that I'm teaching part-time and that I'm editing part-time, but I actually have like good editing clients, and the school that I'm teaching part-time at is a really good school. So, you know, it's actually good that I'm transitioning from full-time Latin teacher to part-time Latin teacher because I've moved to a better school. So convincing them of all that stuff, as you can imagine, when you're explaining, you're losing, as they say in politics. And there was a period there where I was doing a lot of explaining, and I was like, okay, yeah, I need to just be confident. And so I showed them the ring on FaceTime, put it right up to the camera, and they were like, all right, this guy's for
real.
Look
at that. It's 30 carats.
Yeah.
I got the Hope diamond.
Yeah. You off by 29.1 there, JBL, but thank you.
Wait, so were these meetings all over FaceTime?
Yes. So Korea is kind of still a fortress. It's loosened up a little bit in the last couple months, but we made plans to meet in the States. So they're going to come here and we're going to meet up in Alaska.
Did you do a PowerPoint for them? Like, when the third time, did you really just go all out with, you know, did you have flowers delivered to them 5 minutes before the assigned meeting time? And
yeah, I thought about something like that. I think my secret sauce kind of ended up being her sister. So her sister is a bit of a romantic, you know, maybe doesn't have all the same expectations that a around 60-year-old Korean, you know, married couple will have for their firstborn daughter. So the younger sister was a big help. Not only is she helpful for translation purposes, but she's also really helpful from the standpoint of, like, she's oohing and aahing at the ring and saying that I'm sweet and things like that. So she definitely helped the process a bit. Big thanks to her. And then I think the fact that I was committed, so this is three conversations with just me, but that's on top of something like 15 conversations with Lauren, me, and them. And so I think I had demonstrated commitment. I think they kind of wanted to make me sweat a little bit.
Now, was part of this them reconciling themselves to their fact that their daughter is going to live in America? Or were they already reconciled to that?
That is a great question. I don't think that was necessarily a huge thing for them.
I just have to tell you that if some guy said that they wanted to marry Favorite and live in a foreign country across an ocean from me, I would say no a bazillion times.
Correct. Yes.
Not just twice.
And that's the thing I kept coming back to during this process, which got a little tough, was that when I think about it, when I step back, I'm like, I am kind of asking a lot here. So I need to bear with them. I think for them, it's just an adjustment. They know that Lauren her life is in America now. She has a law degree from America. She has an LLM in U.S. tax law. Her career is not going to be anywhere but America, right? And so I think this is part of the process of sort of like of getting all that stuff processed and coming to grips with it or getting comfortable with it, you might say. And I think to just drop like a white boyfriend like right in the middle of all that just is another it's another layer to the whole thing. They're really cool, especially, you know, to put it in blunt terms, especially for Korean parents, frankly, they are very chill. Korean parents are notoriously hard on potential spouses. This is apparently the case for women much more. I guess the first son always gets
like, through whatever he wants.
Yeah, a very weird skepticism toward any girl that comes near the first son is like a major thing. But even for a daughter, and certainly Lauren is very loved by her family, there's just an attitude of, okay, this guy's got to prove himself. And they wanted to make me work a bit for it, I think.
That's good.
It was a lot of processing for them, and a lot of kind of feeling each other out and just telling where does everybody stand on this kind of thing and what's the future family going to look like? Because I made it pretty clear early on, after we'd been dating for several months, that my goals were marriage. You know, I didn't want to hide the ball on that. You know, and
that's great.
So yeah, they adjusted and they communicated with me and it all worked out.
I had the opposite experience when I proposed to Shannon and I went to her folks for their blessing and they signed off like before I was even finished asking, basically.
There we go.
And I was like, what do you, hold on. Don't you want to think about this? And they were like, well, why not? Why wouldn't we? And so I then had to go and argue the other side of the case.
Sure, in the interest of fairness.
I said, I don't know. How about she's too young to make these decisions yet? Or I'm 5 years older than her, and that's a lot of time. Or maybe she needs to start her career first and really find her place without having that all warped by the influence of being tied down in America. Like, don't you even want to consider these? And they were like, no, we really like you. We think it's fine.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Well,
you're in it now.
Your conflicted response to them on that might have been a preview.
Sonny, how was yours? What was your? You didn't even ask permission, did you? You're such a devil may care. You're just like, I'm a lion. I will take what's mine.
Something like that. I want to know more about the National Gallery of Art.
Oh yeah, so the actual proposal. All that setup was to let you guys know that I got the permission on Thursday, and I immediately started making plans for either that Friday or Saturday. And
can't let them change their minds.
Yeah, exactly. Strike while the iron's hot. And so I texted some key friends, including one of my oldest friends, and my oldest friend, period, in DC. And she immediately was like, let me plan the party. She's like, I've always wanted to do an engagement party on less than 48 hours notice. So she does like design stuff. She's kind of a whiz kid on a lot of that kind of thing. She immediately whipped up this like great spur of the moment engagement party for us with a.
That was very nice of Eliana.
There we go. You know, I got a text message from Eliana Johnson about the engagement. It was very sweet.
That's very kind.
I was genuinely quite touched.
What painting did you do it in front of?
Oh, yes, this is a great point.
Did you have like a thing?
So my coworker Matthias basically read my mind. I described the situation and he was like, well, you definitely need to propose in front of the giant portrait of Napoleon. To which I said, I had the exact same thought, but I realized you can't have two things competing. You can't have two works of art competing for attention in the situation. So what I did is I did it in one of those indoor garden areas. So there wasn't actually an art piece distracting, because it's like you've got feet, you've got the girl, you've got the ring.
That's nice.
You can't have too many focal points. So I ended up going that direction rather than doing it in front of a painting.
Gotcha.
Fantastic. Gotcha. All right. So Sonny, here's what I want to talk about. What are you sitting in there? What kind of chair is that?
I don't know. I got it at Office Depot. It was like $80.
So as I was in the process of setting up my new home office, mm-hmm. which is no longer a room that I share with G Money, I realized that I kind of deserve a big boy office chair.
Oh, these things are an interesting word here, but okay, go on.
These things are so expensive.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys knew this. I don't think I really knew this. I thought that only the Herman Miller chairs were expensive and everything else was cheap. Not true. You go to Staples catalog or to Costco, you're paying $400 for a chair that looks like somebody at the DMV sits in it.
Yeah.
Like, not special, not nice. And I wasn't going to pay $400 for that. But I also wasn't going to pay like $1,600 for what I really wanted, which was either a Herman Miller or a human scale or a steel case.
I don't know what any of these things are. You're throwing around names like...
This guy right here is the steel case Freedom with headrest. Human scale Freedom with headrest.
I'm sorry. Again, you're throwing names around here like they mean something. I feel like this is a vestigial remnant of mattress JVL.
It's
JVL
close.
And mattress JVL are probably very, very similar.
Close. I'm not going to pay $1,600 for a chair.
That's crazy.
I'll pay $1,200, but I'm not going to pay $1,600 for a chair. So I went looking around and I found a nice business up here that specializes in premium office furniture that has fallen off of the back of a truck.
Mm. So Tony's chair company.
I'm kidding. It's not actually off the back of a truck. So what it is it was this. It's this business run by this kid. He's 23 years old. In fact, he's a Princeton graduate. And because of COVID, his junior and senior years at Princeton were spent at home here in North Jersey, and he was bored out of his mind because classes did not take up enough of his time because he was a politics major, loves the bulwark. So his mother had wanted an office chair at home. He went looking to buy a chair for her. Like me, saw the chairs cost $2,000 and thought this was ridiculous, especially since there was a pandemic on and businesses were going out of business or downsizing their office footprints. And so he started looking into finding how do you go and buy office chairs from a company that's going out of business, and started doing arbitrage where he would go out and buy, you know, liquidation office chairs and then resell them on Craigslist.
How does it actually work? When a restaurant goes out of business, they like auction all that stuff off. They auction off tables and cookware and that sort of, is that how it works? Or was it just like,
so you got to find the liquidators, mm-hmm. you got to find the liquidators who are handling that, right? Because it's, you know, when a company's going out of business, the process of it going out of business gets outsourced to a third party who specializes in it.
Right.
And he then swoops in, buys a bunch of chairs, refurbishes them, and then turns around and sells them first on Craigslist, then on Craigslist and eBay. And then finally, because retail space got so cheap because all the retail companies were going out of business, he just like opened up a storefront. And you go in, just sit on a bunch of chairs. And
see, now I'm imagining like Robert De Niro at the end of Goodfellas, like, yeah, around the corner. You go around the corner. That's where the good chairs are.
It's great. And I love my new chair. And it's fantastic. This chair retails for $1,600, Sonny.
You paid 12?
I paid much less than 12.
You paid 8?
Much less than 8.
Oh, look at that. You're getting a deal here.
Cut 8 in half, my friend.
$400 for this $1,600 chair. That's like they basically paid you $1,200.
Well, the way I see it,
that chair off their
they
hands.
Paid me $800 to take their chair off their hands. Because if you save $1,200 and you spend $400, that means the actual net on the transaction is that you are plus $800.
Your bank account is $800 larger.
That's how the math seems to work to me.
Yeah.
And this thing is so great. I wake up in the morning looking forward to going down to my office to sit in this chair.
Does it have vibrating pads or heating pads or anything in it?
No, it has.
It's not like a massage chair.
Heavenly lumbar support. The lumbar support is fantastic. And it is adjustable in all the important ways. And when you, here, I'm going to tilt back.
It's not.
When you tilt back in it, oh.
It's not like a chair on the deck of the Enterprise. It doesn't have like panels that you can pop up and like order phasers to fire.
It's amazing.
It's just a regular chair.
Oh, I love Once it again, so much.
I spent like $80 on a brand new chair. It's fine.
Is it? Well, see, this is not fine.
It's fine.
This is amazing.
I mean,
Do you wake up in the morning and think, boy, I can't wait to go down and get in my chair?
No, that's because I'm not a psychopath.
Well,
that's what psychopaths think. When I wake up in the morning, it's like, oh my God, I have to go through another day on this planet. my chair, like, oh, look, I'm leaning back in my chair. I can do that.
What's again, the padding like, in that made of? Is it low density foam? Because mine is made of reactive gel.
It's foam of some sort of faux leather handles and backing.
Vinyl covering. And what are the points of articulation on it?
It's on wheels.
Yeah, Are they soft rollerblade wheels? Because I am on these rollerblade wheels that just, you can feel them kissing
roller
the
rollerblade wheels?
Floor.
What is this? The 1992?
It's great.
You got some neon shorts on under there?
Go look up human scale chairs. Get yourself, if you can afford, if you have the means.
I suggest
you use the human scale Freedom Headrest.
I'm glad that they paid you $800 to take that chair off their hands. That's good for you. But I have to say, I've never had any complaints about my $89 chair or whatever from Office Depot.
It's because you don't know what you're missing. How are you, Sonny? What's going on with you, buddy?
I don't know. I got this great chair. That's what's going on in my life. Not a whole lot. It's funny. The my kids have gotten very into going to the movie theaters. We'll talk about this in a minute since we're discussing Minions, Rise of Gru. But they have gotten so into it that like for a while this week, I was seriously contemplating pulling my oldest child, she's gonna be 7 in like 2 weeks.
out of her camp to go see Pee-wee's Big Adventure
at the
Alamo Draft House. Because that's what they're showing for their, like, you know, weekday kids movies. They have, like,
a movie camp. That's what they call it.
Movie camp, exactly. Yeah. They call it movie camp. $5 tickets. Great deal. And I was, like, I was very strongly considering just, like, going and getting her out of class, like, or, you know, out of camp and going to this. And eventually, I brought this up kind of jokingly to my lovely wife. I was like, oh, wouldn't that be funny? She's like, no, that's a dumb idea. Why would you do that? I was like, yeah, no, I would never do that. Take her to see one of my favorite movies from that age. Why would I do that?
I was just kidding. I was just testing you, Beth.
I didn't end up doing that. But and then this was another thing I was very strongly considering until I got like a weird look from my lovely wife. I was like, maybe I'll just go myself, you know? She's like, no, you can't just go to the kids camp movie by yourself. You'll get on some sort of list.
With the trench coat.
You'll get on a fedora.
Totally cool.
I'm just here to see the movie. I didn't realize it was for children. So I did not end up doing either of those things. And I regret it. I regret it already. My life is filled with regrets. I've got this terrible chair, apparently. I didn't go see Pee-wee's Big Adventure on the big screen like I wanted to. I keep messing up. So that's how my week has been. Just a series of regrets. And the other thing that I've been doing is I've been watching a lot of Kevin Costner movies recently for a thing. One of which is that knock on wood, but I should have the director and writer of Bull Durham on Bull Goes to Hollywood next week, which will be a fun show. I don't know where I brought where I was going with this. Oh, the weird thing about it, about Kevin Costner, is that very few of his movies, weirdly, are available on streaming, especially his early movies. Like, I had to rent Fandango on VOD, which is a great movie. I don't if you haven't seen Fandango, you should see it. It's fantastic. And also, God, what else? Oh, Silverado's
ticket service.
It is. There's a title card at the beginning that is Fandango is a type of it's a type of music or a dance or like a general craziness.
I see.
So it means something before Fandango.com, the movie ticket sales company. It's been vaguely annoying how few of these early Kevin Costner movies are just streaming on HBO Max or whatever. We'll need to get on it. We need more Kevin Costner in our lives.
Yeah, God forbid you just purchase them.
Well, I rented them. I rented them on VOD. It's not like Fandango. It's not like there's a 4K copy of Fandango floating around. Right. I think there's like a Shout Factory. There's like a Shout Factory Blu-ray that is out of print at like $80 now, which is whatever.
It just means it's a good investment. You should have picked it up.
I should have bought it at the time. I actually think that one's still in print. There was some other one that is out of print.
It's like 20% of a really good desk chair.
Well, and it's better too because it's art.
By the way, I would just say to make my chair buying experience complete, as this kid is checking me out in his store, he says to me, "Do you know Tim Miller?" And this was.
You say, no, he's an ass.
the third time this week that I had been in proximity to somebody, and what the only question they had for me was whether or not I knew Tim Miller.
New York Times bestselling author.
New York Times bestselling author.
Real-time guest, MSNBC regular. He's gonna be big one of these days. So good for him. Good for him. You got a chair. He got a best-selling book. I think you're the winner.
I said, I do know Tim. I'm just one of his minions.
No, speaking of minions, huge weekend at the box office for the Minions. Hold on, let me pull up Box Office Mojo. Big weekend, movie grossed $125 million over the four-day weekend, $123 million over the four-day weekend. Meanwhile, Top Gun Maverick... I'm just going to go to three-day weekends because then I can talk about drops. Three-day weekend for Top Gun Maverick is $26 million, dropping 12%. Elvis does $18.5 million for a drop of 40%, which is a pretty good hold. And meanwhile, Lightyear continues to fall like a stone. It's down 65% again this weekend, 6.5 million. That movie is not... Lightyear will make less money in its entire run than Minions made in its opening 4-day weekend. I mean, I don't know what happened with that movie, but it's a disaster. Nobody wants to see it.
Pixar is trash. That's why.
Apparently Pixar's trash. It's too woke. The movie's too woke, and Pixar's trash. And
no, Pixar makes movies for parents now, not for kids. This is why Pixar is trash. All Pixar exists now to do is to take a needle and push it through the eye of parents in order to stimulate parts of their brain to make them cry. That's all Pixar has been done.
That's all
done
Pixar's
for the
ever
last
done.
10 years. Well, there used to be like with also with done. A little bit of imagination, but we are all wise to their formula now, and we're not going to be manipulated by Pixar into crying anymore.
Well, I'll tell you right, what Paul? I cried at Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, of course.
No, I cried at Minions.
Oh, yeah. When Ice
you saw Top Gun Maverick, right? Right, Paul?
I am crazy about Top Gun Maverick. I saw it with Vic and his son, and it is incredibly awesome, like to the point where there aren't words for it. And I think Vic described my reaction on the show as being like my expectations were through the roof and it met them anyway. But what I actually said was my expectations were through the roof and it exceeded them. So yes, I am crazy about Top Gun Maverick. And
people love that
speaking
movie.
Of Lightyear, totally joyless. I stepped into it after Minions because I was like, I'm in a theater and it's raining outside. I've got a few minutes to kill. And
Sonny, isn't that close to piracy?
Did you buy another ticket?
No, I did not buy another ticket.
How dare you?
So I stepped in and I saw... I actually came in right when the title card was there. And it's just like very notable. So I saw it from the beginning. I was like jumping in, you know. And it's just
like... you watched an entire second movie for free.
No, I did not watch the entire movie.
How much of the movie did you watch? How much of the movie did you watch, Paul?
I stuck out.
Be careful, I'm recording this.
It felt like 25 minutes. I think it was probably more like 12. All the banter was bad. It wasn't charming or anything. And it also, the whole plot is that they're stuck. I hate it when the plot is like, we're stuck or we're not moving, or this is like The Last Jedi had this problem where like we're out of space. We're out of space gasoline and so we can't move. It's so boring. It's like a very joyless movie. So I totally see.
Tell me, does this strike you as the kind of movie that a 9-year-old child would have seen in 1991 and thought, this is amazing. This has blown my mind. I have to have all the toys of it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And if so, would that child have wanted the Buzz Lightyear toy or the cat toy? Because I think they would have wanted the robot cat. It just doesn't make sense. On it. Again, and all of it is, we're going to hit parents about what family means. Go F yourself, Pixar.
Yeah.
But I don't think it even does that very well. It really doesn't do that very well. I don't know what this movie is trying to do. But like to your point about the movie being stuck, the worst part of the movie is that they decide just to stay there. At the conclusion of the movie is they're like, yeah, we're just gonna stay on this planet now. This is where we live. We'll send the Space Rangers off to do their Space Ranger things, I guess, at the end. But like, we're just gonna this is our planet now. This is our home. And just like the whole thing is bad and annoying.
And I do think I'm glad the woke aspect.
I'm glad
of
you
it,
didn't pay for a ticket,
quote unquote. Yeah, I do think like the woke aspect, quote unquote, is one of those things where I don't think that. Like people are trying to shield their eyes from like lesbian relationships. People do have like a little bit of a radar for a movie that's like trying to be serious when it shouldn't be. And when there's like a thing going on where it's like, oh, well, we have like a social comment that we're trying to make, and we have this and we have that.
Yeah.
And
there's definitely
something it's like people just want a fun movie. That's what Pixar's for.
It's not a good movie. It's a bad movie, but Minions is definitely a movie that kids love. I have never seen my children react to a movie like they reacted to Minions Rise of Gru, just peals of laughter. And that's the only review I can really give this movie. I like the movie itself is
it's not a movie.
To say it's incomprehensible is wrong, because it's not incomprehensible. It's very comprehensible. But it just like every single thing that happened, and I was like, why is this happening? I don't care about any of this.
It's a series of 3-minute shorts.
It's like a Three Stooges.
Yes, that is exactly
like
what it
over
is.
And over and over yes. again.
Kevin Stewart and Bob are the Three Stooges, and we have them running. And so, whatever you should do a big. Well, do you want me to do a big Roy review?
You do a big Roy review because I have nothing to say about this movie. I just like have nothing to say about it.
Minions, The Rise of Gru takes us back to the childhood of Felonious Gru in 1970s somewhere, and everybody is swingers and with disco hair and bell bottoms, and Gru is in sixth grade and he wants to join the Sinister Six, and
no, it's something else. It's like the
all right, Sinister Six. We can't just say that. The Sinister Six is the Spider-Man villains.
Insidious Six or something.
Whatever. He wants to join the Legion of Doom, and the Legion of Doom people inexplicably have cast off their leader for no good reason, except so that the movie can happen. And they have gone and stolen the Emerald Whatchamacallit, which is going to let them do things that are never
Zodiac
explained
wheel.
Until later. And
Chinese Zodiac.
And Gru wants to go and join them. And he decides he's going to leave his minions behind because he's ready for the big time. But instead, Gru is kidnapped by the former head who'd been betrayed. And the point is, we have three stories happening. The first story is Gru joining forces with the guy who has kidnapped him and viewing him as a father figure. The second is the fat minion going cross country doing Easy Rider as he goes to get the special gem Emerald Zodiac. And the third movie is a series of sketches with the Three Stooges minions. And all of these, nothing in the movie, no sequence is longer than 3 minutes, I don't think. Each sequence can be seen as its own short with a beginning, middle, and end, so that each sequence feels like a completed story, even though it's a short animated story. And the whole thing is over in, 70 minutes? 75
minutes?
Yeah,
85 minutes. It's pretty quick.
And children giggle their fool heads through the whole thing. And because these things started in, I think, 2010 is the first Despicable
Yes,
Me.
2010.
We have a whole generation of people who are now like 16 to 20 years old, who grew up with minions and for whom the minions are to them what Tom and Jerry were to other people, or Bugs Bunny or Roger Rabbit. And they make TikTok videos by showing up wearing suits. I don't
understand. Gentle minions. This is my favorite thing about. All right, so this is the one thing I do actually know something. So there was a TikTok viral meme of kids.
Love TikTok.
Kids wearing like full formal suits with sunglasses and stuff, and going to the theaters. And they would, the well-behaved ones would like sit there and like tense their fingers and do like evil things, right? And then the ill-behaved ones would have like raves. They'd be like freaking out and like dancing in the aisles and blah blah. And it got to the point where certain theaters in England and in New York City, a couple other places, they just stopped selling tickets to. If you came to the box office wearing a suit, they were like, you do not get to buy a ticket for Minions Rise of Gru. And there was another video I saw that wasn't people actually dressed up in suits. They were all wearing like yellow. So maybe this is a different meme. But they like were flipping out. And the managers came out before the show, was like, if you don't calm down, we're going to send all of you home. None of you are getting a refund. And sure enough, they got sent home. None of them got a refund. But I'm pro gentle minions. I am going to shock the world here by coming out in favor of the rowdy kids in the movie theaters. And let me tell you why. It's because we need this generation to have some experiences in the theaters that are pleasant and memory forming, and they gotta come back to the theaters. Otherwise, theaters are gonna die.
Can I
pro
before
gentlemen.
Before we go on with this? Does Hollywood want to die? Because if you are in the theatrical exhibition business, and there you would pay people to come to your theater at this point, right? You do anything to get the idea that the exhibitors would want to crack down on getting a younger generation of kids showing up to the theater to buy popcorn. It just strikes me as insane.
Right. I mean, I'll play devil's advocate. I agree with you, but I'll play devil's advocate here because, like, some of these people were, like, bringing bananas to the thing and throwing them at the screen. Like, you can't have that, obviously. And, you know, they were causing such a ruckus that, like, other paying customers were demanding their money back and leaving. Like, obviously, that's a problem. That's not ideal. But, I can't believe that
you set up, like, the Rocky Horror Picture version showings of it, right? You lean into it and make it a thing.
I can't understand how meme lord Adam Aaron, head of AMC, hasn't, like, got... banana NFTs that he's giving away to kids to come to the movie theaters and, you know, do their TikTok dances or whatever at AMC's. Like, set up an area outside in the lobby where they can, like, come and, like, stand with the standees and, like, send the guy in the Truth Monkey costume out to these theaters with bananas and have him, you know, I don't know, do whatever, but, like, lean into this. Yeah. How can you not lean into this?
Yeah. So, Paul, what did you think? You're slightly too old. Right. So the first Minions movie comes out when you're in, like, middle school. So you're too old for animation and it doesn't mean anything to you.
You were probably like, what? Wait, let me guess. You were 14 when the first one came out.
2010, we said.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I was 17.
He was six.
Way too old.
Side note, though, I am a huge animation fan in general. So I don't observe the, like, age restriction niceties necessarily. That being said, Despicable Me definitely felt like something that was aimed at a younger audience. And while I thought it was a good movie in some ways, like, it definitely had some redeeming qualities, it wasn't the sort of thing where I was, like, totally bought in. Whereas, like, How to Train Your Dragon was a movie that actually, like, kind of excited me. Like, it had something kind of, like, a little bit... like, different and exciting to me, whereas Despicable Me felt like a play to kids. So, like, Avatar The Last Airbender felt like it was aiming sort of upward, like something that more grown-up people could enjoy as well. And Despicable Me felt like something that was, like, aiming downward with, like, the fart jokes and stuff.
Well, it just felt to me like I actually thought it was a DreamWorks animation picture. For a long time, I didn't realize it was Universal until, like, I was trying to figure out where to watch the originals, because my kids... really, really wanted to watch the rest of the Minions movies after seeing Minions Rise of Gru. So we watched Despicable Me this week, and their review, not enough Minions.
Yeah.
Needed Minions more Minions.
The Minions were an accident.
So this is this is all, I don't know how, but the corporate story of the Minions verse is interesting. So this all comes about because Chris Meledandri... Am I saying his name right?
Something like
that. He comes, never has been a more of a career been made of less. He comes out of Fox, where he is responsible for Fox Animation, Titan A.E., which is
legendary
a movie
bomb that
bombs so hard that Fox shut down its animation unit after it. He broke Fox. His job was running Fox Animation. And he broke Fox Animation. And for his next job, Universal came to him and said, "We want you so bad to run our animation department that we will give you a piece of the action." They gave him an ownership stake. And what he has done is oversee a couple Minions movies and a couple Sing movies.
The Sing movies are also huge.
That's it. Yeah. But these things are so valuable as part of a streaming organization's catalog because you cannot succeed in streaming without a really strong kids program. Because this is, I don't want to spoil the ride for you, Paul, but you need screens to park your children in front of.
Yes.
Without them, you can't get through the day. And so you need to be able to park. And kids, that's why exactly, you know, I would say... Chris learned his lesson, Chris Meledandri or whatever is that, let me say his name. Don't go for Titan A.E. Make stuff for the six-year-olds. Make the six-year-olds laugh because the six-year-olds will watch the same movie 1,000 fucking times.
Yep.
And
see also Shrek.
Yeah, Shrek. So I actually like the original Despicable Me, because it is a comedy which works on two levels. The first is the fart jokes. But the second, what is funny about it, is that Gru, in the original telling, he goes and adopts a bunch of orphans because he wants to use them to steal a piece of technology. And so it is, if you are a parent, the idea of somebody willingly becoming a parent because he thinks he's going to be able to use the kids to get something is hilarious, right? Like, oh, I'm sorry you chose to do that.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is filled with the humor of watching somebody who has bumbled into parenthood being confronted with what parenthood actually means. And so there is this dark humor to it that only operates at the level of parents. And it is not the Pixar, like, heartstrings tugging, hugging and learning type stuff. And that works really well, and nothing else in the movie. This is, The Rise of Gru is the fifth installment. We have a sixth installment coming out 2 years from now in 2024. None of the other ones really work, but as movies, but they all really work as pieces of kids content.
Yeah.
Because again, I really believe this. I think it's because kids can pop in and out of them for 3 minutes at a time. And, you know, the through line to the movie itself is totally immaterial. It's a bunch of shorts.
Well, it's funny. So the last trailer for this movie was literally, it was just the airplane heist sequence. Yeah. In full. And when this sequence started, so first off, I just kind of assumed that for some reason, the whole movie would be about them running an airline. Because I was like, well, I guess that's what the teenagers are doing now. They're running this airline. But no, when it started, it was literally just the trailer in full in the movie. And I was like, wait, I've seen all of this. I mean, not like I've seen most of it, or I've seen beats of it, or like I can follow what's happening from. It was like, I've seen this whole 3 minute stretch of the film like five times in movie theaters. What is happening here? But that's what the whole movie is. You could have pulled any 3 minute yep. stretch of the film out and used it as a trailer, and it would have worked fine. Or at least any 3 minute that is focused, 3 minute segment that is focused entirely on the minions. You could have pulled any of those segments out and put it here, and it would have been fine. And there's a purity to that I kind of admire in a way. Like, I don't think writing that sort of thing is easy exactly. I don't think it's terribly hard, but I also don't think it's easy. And the fact that A, they're able to do it successfully, and B, kids genuinely love it. I mean, like, the kids in my theater were out of their chairs in the aisles laughing. I mean, it was like, I've never seen anything like that before at the Draft House. I just had never seen anything yeah. like that.
G-Money was in these. Full belly laugh mode where he just couldn't stop. And I was a little worried that it was so rambunctious, except that lots of other kids in the theater were doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I was not, as somebody who like actually has never watched any of these in full before this, I went back and rewatched Despicable Me, which I like a little bit less than JBL. I think it's fine. But like, I'd never really watched any of these, so I wasn't entirely sure what to expect. Lost it. They all, everybody under the age of eight in my theater was on the ground, like rolling, like in a horror movie when the laughing gas is released. That's what my theater was like.
Yeah. So, Paul, what'd you think?
I was hoping for an experience like that myself. So I came in, and Sonny, you talked about the whole...
You went alone to the Minions movie, like Sonny wanting to go alone to the Pee-wee?
Yes, and I may have entered a little bit of a Victorino Mattis situation, because when I walked into the theater, it was all teenagers. So it was teen girls who were at my showing. And because that's because they're the...
The plot thickens.
They were like 5, 6, 7... when the first one comes out sure. or, you know, the second one or whatever. And so they still have, it's like you said, Tom and Jerry for like that generation. So I was wondering a little bit what their reaction would be. I was hoping for kids, cause I knew that it would be boisterous and that would be kind of entertaining in its own way. But I didn't get much from the teenage crowd. I think that they are going to stay, like you said, they're like kids content. Like, so I think with the first Despicable Me, there was a broad interest there. I really loved the kid characters in that movie, Agnes, Margot. Oh. They really work, I think. And that's why the first Despicable Me was one of the reasons why it works so well. But they're not attempting anything like that anymore. And they haven't. I did my research. I went back. I watched Despicable Me 2. I skipped Despicable Me 3 because apparently it's terrible. I watched Minions, the first one, in prep for this one. And it was just very clear that, like, that core through line of the first one, they didn't really have anything else like that in the other movies. What's funny to me is they kind of tried in this movie with the old guy villain that we mentioned earlier, and that character completely does not work.
Yeah,
Wild Knuckles,
voiced by Alan Arkin.
That completely does not work. So there's no virtue in it for, like, the teenager or the adult that has nostalgia for the Minions and for Gru and things like that. There's just not anything there. It's, like, totally just a play for kids.
Wait, so in the first Minions movie, in the first prequel, Minions, that is a prequel, right?
Yes. It's how they find Gru. At the end of it, they find Gru.
Where do the Minions come from?
They have been around since the dawn of time.
Like Oompa Loompas?
Basically, they're immortal. They're just sort of always there. They're basically indestructible.
How do you kill a minion?
They're indestructible.
Yeah, they're indestructible. And I don't think they breed because it's the same ones. When you go back to ancient history, when there's dinosaurs and stuff, it looks like it's the same group of kids. So,
are they all male?
Yes, I think so.
So every minion that we see in a dress is wearing drag.
I think male is too strong. I think you're imposing.
That's true.
A biological construct on them, which does not exist. I think they simply are.
They do have male names.
I don't think there is.
And they occupy.
Yeah, I guess
they basically.
Right.
They all have male. Well, this is what I'm saying. They all have male names, and when they dress up like women, they're all wearing, like, comic British drag with, like, melons.
And they are voiced by a man. And I think the idea is, I would describe it as, like, it's the human logo on the men bathroom kind of idea. They are minion, and they sort of are a default male facing kind of thing, but they don't really have a gender.
Okay.
They're not real, Sonny. You know what they are? They are one of the greatest merchandising opportunities in the history of animation. I mean, they're bigger than the Smurfs, as a piece of merchandising. The lunch boxes, the sweatshirts, the t-shirts, the toothpaste, the bananas, right? You go buy bananas and
buy a $5 banana.
Has the
how much could a banana cost?
Branded
$10.
You know, they increase the price because of the branding. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
there was a funny viral tweet that was going around that was like, when I got my new apartment, this was the key they gave me, and the guy, like, has it on one side, flips it over, it's a Minions key. It's like he went to the Home Depot, like he got from the Home Depot, you know, the Minions branded, and that's everything. It's everywhere. I never quite realized how huge this phenomenon was, but apparently it's very, very big.
I got to tell you, my favorite piece of Minions branding are the Minions Halloween costumes for kids. Especially, my niece went as a Minion at age 2, I think. One of the greatest kids costumes I've ever seen. Because toddlers are the perfect size to be real life minions.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
It's amazing.
If you make it real big and plushy too, they can, like, fall around.
Yeah.
Basically indestructible. Yeah. Toss them downstairs.
And I think I told you about this. That one of the other, there is a certain genius to the Minions, which is that it all plays almost equally well as a silent movie.
Yeah.
As it does. Like, you need no dialogue.
Yeah.
And the Minions made up language changes wherever they show the movie. So the German version of Minions, their language is different than what we hear, because the idea is that you are hearing a bunch of sounds that are vaguely like your native tongue mixed with some foreign words that will be understandable to you based upon. So if you speak English, you're going to understand the occasional French word or the occasional Spanish word that the Minions throw out. It's, you know, genius in a way. I mean, it is pure commerce in a way which I almost find admirable. I mean, it's like you ate the whole wheel of cheese, right? I'm not even mad. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, and this is why I can't even I thought about coming home and trying to write a review of this movie, and I was like, how would I review it? I don't even, like, I don't know what I would, I don't really know what the point would be of reviewing. Now, granted, I'm going to review Thor 4, and there's not really much point in reviewing that either, but, you know, I it's such a weird, narrowly, but also, like, very, it's, like, narrowly directed at kids, but it's also, like, broad enough to hit all kids.
Yeah.
That I don't even know, like, it's the definition of critic group. Yeah. It's like, what is a 6-year old going to read my review and be like, look at this asshole. Like,
you become a thing on TikTok.
I was like,
everyone's attacking you. Hey, did you hear about this Sunny Bunch guy? Is that even a real name?
Some more like Bunch of Bananas. And then they do like a crazy dance and they throw bananas everywhere. That's what I imagine TikTok is like. I don't watch Minions movies. I don't go on TikTok. So the whole Minions TikTok craze is like doubly confusing to me.
Well,
good show.
I did do a little research on this, you know, because I want to bring some value here. And you know, anyone can go.
Yeah, we wanted you to Minionsplain this.
Yeah,
to us.
Any
Minionsplain these movies. Yeah, to us.
Anyone can go just look up, you know, on Box Office Mojo or whatever, the numbers in Korea. Yeah, that's right, Sonny. I'm looking at you.
Wow.
Can anyone just go straight to the man on the street in Korea? You know, that's the great exporter now of culture, South Korea. And so I went straight to my sources, Chanmi and Paul, and I was just asking them, like, what's the deal with the Minions? Because I knew that, like, they had used a Minions GIF one time in a conversation. So I was like, all right, this is, they're aware. And so I started chatting with them, and they said, kids are obsessed with them. They sing the banana song all the time. I think it works really, really well because for a similar reason that Adam Sandler works well overseas, comedy is usually culturally specific and it doesn't cross borders unless you have something that is like elemental and physical and doesn't really rely on dialogue very much. And so, like, as the man-child archetype, Adam Sandler has been able to be a global brand, like pretty much no other like comedy figure is. And these movies, I think, go global very easily for all the reasons that you guys described. So while my friends were not into the Minions movies, they were definitely very aware of them. They think they're cute, you know, that kind of thing. There's an awareness that they are like the adorable kid mascots of like this younger generation. And that's something that it crosses borders, I think, very easily given the reality of what it is.
The perfect example of what you're talking about, Paul, is Jackie Chan, who is essentially Buster Keaton, right? I mean, Jackie Chan can play anywhere in the world because what he's doing is all physical and all perfectly relatable because he, you know, it's comedy, but it's also action, and you don't need a single word of dialogue to understand what's happening. All of it is being done with his body and his very broad facial expressions. Yeah, which are part of the secret of Jackie Chan. It's not just the physicality, but his face is so big and expressive.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
All right.
All right.
Can't wait to talk about Jimmy Caan and the bonus.
Yes,
R.I.P.
We're calling an audible here on Paul. We told him to prep for a different segment, but instead we're going to do R.I.P. James Caan. So go to IMDb and look up James Caan's movies. Paul, while I do the outro.
All right, I'll do that.
That's all the time we are giving to this week's episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sunny Bunch. Paul, what's your Twitter handle? Where can people follow you?
I am P_Crookston, P as in Paul.
All right. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time. What you got, JBL?
So what we had told Paul to prep for was the most unlikely successful series. And I would like to just spend the 30 seconds we have here on that topic, because it really interested me. The first series that came to mind for me was Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about the movie Jaws says to me, this is a series.
Yeah.
except that what Jaws establishes is that series are driven by economics and nothing else, right? If a movie makes enough money, then it has to become a series. And the reason it has to become a series is because movies exist to make money. And so this happens again and again. I don't think that anybody expected Alien to be a series, or Nightmare on Elm Street, or Friday the 13th, any of these Fast and the Furious, right? None of these were intended. You see intentional plays at building franchises and mini worlds and, you know, the Monsterverse or the Chav.
Alita Battle Angel.
The Alita Battle Angel, you know. But those are, I would say, historically the exception rather than the rule. And the rule is that a series is born when a movie makes just way more money than anybody thinks it was going to. And in that way, I still think Jaws kind of strikes me as like it's this weird horror-ish movie, but not really a horror movie. The truth is it's very long and talky. The action is very intermittent. The stars are Richard Dreyfuss, who is not yet really a movie star. And what's, help me, Roy Scheider, who is, you know, a star, but he's not Harrison Ford or anything. Right. And yet it became, how many Jaws movies were there?
Seven? At least four.
I mean, I feel like there were just a lot of Jaws movies. Yeah. So anyway, that was my entry for that.
Yeah, Jaws. Well, I mean, the initial question was inexplicable success, and to me, it's like very explicable. It's like, okay, Jaws made shitload of money, right? That's why. In that same vein, though, since we're discussing like random successes and how they became sequels, I mean, this is also the John Wick story. You know, John Wick is like a very well done, very well reviewed, very well received action movie. Like, makes a decent amount of money at the box office, but doesn't blow the doors off. I think that first one only made about $80 million worldwide off a $20 million budget. So like, it probably just about broke even on the domestic and foreign. You know, more or less, it probably about broke even. But where it made a ton of money was home sales. I mean, it made something like $45 million on home sales, which I'm reading an oral history of the John Wick books right now, and the producer mentions that like we did about $45 million on either John Wick or John Wick 2, I forget which one, and compare that to Fast and the Furious 8 or 9, which also did about $45 million. On home sales. So like this is a series that plays exceptionally well at home. People buy these movies, people rent them. And that is what like made it a viable series. Now it's a box office monster, as well as being a home video sales monster. But it started, the reason that became a series is because like it made a ton of money off of Redbox and VOD and DVD and Blu-ray, and then, you know, 4K sales, just tons and tons of money.
Paul, what was your entry on this?
I actually thought of Jaws immediately too, for the same reasons you described. It doesn't make sense to do sequels, but of course they're going to do it because it was just too much of a hit. I love Roger Ebert's review of Jaws 3D. I believe the shark roars in Jaws 3D, which
as sharks do.
I also thought of Air Bud, which was one of those ridiculous movies that got it got one theatrical sequel. So I had to look this up. Golden Receiver was the only theatrical sequel it got, but it has like 37 direct-to-video sequels. Oh, it's one of the like most prolific. Just like there's like, because there was this whole spin-off Buddies that they had where they go to space, and there's just like, it's like one of those hilarious things where it's like
all those dog movies were like Beethoven. There's like seven Beethoven movies. Remember Beethoven?
Beethoven. There's another one with the Golden Retriever. Along the same, the Iron Eagle movies with Louis Gossett Jr. I feel like they made a ton of those, and yet nobody likes them, right? I mean, they just kept making them because there was a whole Top Gun never made any sequels until Maverick, and so the Iron Eagle guys are just sitting there going, "People like fighter plane movies, we'll do another."
The weirdest, The weirdest, we'll end this here in a second, but the weirdest like turn in these series has to be Rambo. So like First Blood comes out, and First Blood is basically like, it's kind of action-y, but it's also like a story about, you know, the Vietnam vet who is like wronged by society. It's like kind of more internally focused and whatever. And then Rambo, First Blood, what it was, Rambo 2, First Blood 2, whatever, comes out, and he's like enormous, and he's like putting on the headbands, he's going back to Vietnam to save the POWs, and people are like getting angry that this movie exists. And by the third one, you know, he's like, you know, winning the war in Afghanistan single-handedly. Like that series shifted in such a way that that is very weird to me, and but also like makes perfect sense. It's like, if you want, like, if you want this to be a series, it basically has to be like Rambo can't just like show up in random towns all across the country and get beaten up by asshole cops. Like that's not a series. He has to be like an action hero in the Stallone Schwarzenegger mode. And how do you do that? Well, you send him overseas and have him kill a bunch of foreigners.
You know, the Fast and Furious, same thing, right? Fast and Furious is a heist movie that by number four, I guess, they realize, yeah, we got to turn this into Mission Impossible. And then by six, they're like, yeah, just make it a superhero movie. Yeah, just make them superheroes. That's all that matters. And it works. I'm sure it's fine.
All right.